Welcome to the Experts in Sport podcast, brought to you by the School of Sport, Exercise and Health Sciences at Loughborough University. This podcast seeks to bring together the worlds of academia and professional practice. If you're interested in the latest research and trends in sport and want to hear from experts from around the world, then subscribe now, because this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Martin Foster, Applied Sport Management Lead at Loughborough University. Today we're going to hear from Elizabeth Manoli. Elizabeth is a lecturer in sport marketing and communications in the School of Sport, Exercise and Health Sciences at Loughborough University. We're going to talk to Elizabeth about her research on the mapping of corruption in sport in the EU. We'll hear Elizabeth describe the different types of corruption, including match fixing and bribery. She will explain some of the commercial tricks that sport business may use to avoid tax or laundering money, and we'll hear where corruption is the most prevalent in the EU. Additionally, we have something a little bit different for you today, as Sid, our usual editor and producer, is going to be sat in the hot seat hosting our discussion.
Hello, Martin. Hello, Elizabeth. Welcome to the Loughborough Sportcast. How are you doing today, Elizabeth?
I'm well. How are you?
Fantastic, fantastic. Martin, I can't help but notice that you're unhappy with your chair in the studio today. Could you tell the listeners about that?
I'm really happy, actually, Sid. I'm sat on the easy end. I'm the guest end. I can mess about. I can do what I like, and the pressure's on you.
Well, it's only been a minute, and I'm enjoying my time as a co-host. But let's begin today's podcast on corruption in sport, shall we? Elizabeth, could you, for the listeners, give us a brief introduction about yourself and your research?
Yep. My name is Dr. Elizabeth Manoli. I'm an academic, a lecturer working here in Loughborough University. I'm originally a marketeer, sport marketeer. I've worked in football for years and in international sport events. And whilst working for them, I became aware, I was in the right place or the wrong place at the right time, and I experienced corruption from firsthand. And that sparked the interest for the second bit of my research. I'm still a marketeer, but the other half of me does research on corruption. So I'm somewhere in the middle now, full-time academic, but still doing bits and bobs in the industry.
All right.
So today we'll look at the mapping of corruption in sport. Mm-hmm. So you were commissioned to do a paper by the EU?
Yes.
Yeah? Before we go into the depth of it, can you just define corruption broadly for us, and then we'll start to have a look at all the different elements of corruption?
Well, the problem with corruption so far has been its subjectivity. Corruption, and any definition of corruption, it depends on the definer. It depends on the social economic background by which we are raised and the society in which we live. So in the broader sense that we can understand it, any form of misuse or abuse of someone's power, authority, role in order to have any form of personal or collective gain should be cast as corruption. But again, definitions vary depending on who you ask.
Okay. So is corruption a new thing? Has it been around for a while, or?
You mean both in general and in sport? No, it's not a new thing. It's been around for as long as humans have been alive. In society overall, we have documented cases dating millennia back. In sport in particular, the first documented cases we have in terms of match fixing, the first documented case is around the 2nd or the 3rd century BC. Match fixing in the ancient Olympics in Greece. In terms of doping, we have evidence suggesting that there was an anti-doping code around the 2nd century BC, again in the ancient Olympics. The punishment for people caught doping at that time was slavery, slightly different from what we have today. But again, it's not a new thing. Corruption has always been endemic to society, has always been endemic to sport because it mirrors society. So it's not a new phenomenon, no.
No. You've already touched upon two of the types of corruption there. So you touched upon match fixing and doping. Just briefly, what other forms of corruption do we have? And then we'll go into some detail about those that we've just mentioned.
Well, match fixing and doping are the ones that pop up all the time. So when we do talk about corruption, realistically, match fixing and doping are the ones that you're going to read about it in the news. You're going to learn about them through any forms of research. And the ones that we as fans of sport tend to talk about the most, but there are more. There are definitely more. So from the typical ones of bribery and nepotism and tax evasion, which you can find in other forms of industries as well, to some particular ones within sport of amazing commercial tricks, for the lack of a better term. So anything that has to do with player transfers or building new stadia or electing officials, sponsorship agreements, TV broadcasting agreements, etc. We have betting, and I'm not talking about the legal form of betting, illegal betting. Use of inside information, and so on and so forth.
Lots and lots. We'll touch upon most of them as we go on. Mm-hmm. But if we can just go into detail on some of the more specific ones. So, for example, let's go and look at match fixing.
Yeah.
So, have you got a broader example of match fixing and a deeper definition of what match fixing is and why it exists?
Well, again, there are a number of definitions on match fixing. We've actually, even conducting this report for the European Commission, was a bit of a challenge, because there's a number of stakeholders involved. And quite often, each stakeholder comes up with their own definition. So, in simple terms, when we are looking into any form of match manipulation, so when we have a sporting event and we're trying to manipulate either the final result or any predefined result within that duration of the match, that should be considered match fixing. Okay. So it doesn't have to be the final thing, by the way, it could be spot fixing. So if you want to achieve a particular result at a particular point, if you want to have a red card at a particular point, or a yellow, or anything, that again is spot fixing, so it goes under the wider umbrella of match fixing.
Okay, so where have you found that it's most prevalent, match fixing? Where is it happening?
You mean sport?
Sport, country?
It seems to be quite popular in football. But that being said, it is very popular in football because this is where a lot of the money is, and it's a very well commercialized industry. It is quite prevalent in a number of countries, if I'm not mistaken. I have to go back to the report and tell you on which country. But in general, we found corruption in a number of countries around the EU. So France, UK, Bulgaria, they rank pretty high on the list. But that doesn't mean that match fixing does not exist in other countries. So we've had big scandals in Germany, in Belgium, in Cyprus, in Greece. So just limiting and pinpointing on one country is really not fair.
Yeah.
Especially because in some countries it has attracted the attention of the press more than in others. And again, it depends on the league. So we've seen match fixing in Cyprus and UK in horse racing, for example, which might not make the media as much as a big case in football.
And with the cases, I was going to say that. So with the cases, the fact that they're more prevalent in France, Bulgaria, the UK, could be that they're just finding them better and therefore they're responding better to them than other countries. Could that be...
I don't think that responses wouldn't be in the same category for me as the documentation of match fixing, because sometimes it depends on how many people come up and talk about it. So there are countries in which there is a lot of press interest on it, but there hasn't been an official response. So unfortunately, we don't see a correlation between the countries that actually detect corruption and the ones that respond to it. So I wouldn't really put them together.
Okay, that does make sense to me. So in terms of match fixing, what are people trying to achieve from the match fixing? They're trying to get a result, pay for a result from an outcome. Why are people trying to do it? What's the main reasons for it?
Well, the most documented one is profit, but it's not always profit driven. So what we've seen in terms of profit, it's either the direct profit, so the betting somebody has already found a rate that is favorable for a particular result at a particular time. So they're going to make any effort possible so that they achieve that result and they get the gains from the bet. But that's just one way. There is the indirect or the long-term profit. So by ranking first on the league or by assisting another club to rank first in the league, they are going to get long-term profit through commercial agreements and participation in European competitions. And then there is the non-profit related motivation, which comes down to either individual agreements between players or between clubs or between stakeholders within clubs, in which there's ulterior motive. So you're helping another club win, or you're winning yourself because something else is going to happen which is not related to profit, quite often linked to image laundering or any other pressures from, again, personal relations.
So image laundering, what do you mean by that specifically?
Image laundering is, again, I wish I coined that term, but it's not mine. The idea behind it, it's very good. The idea behind it is that some individuals will get involved in sport in order to showcase and promote a particular image, which is better than an image they have held before. So you might become the owner of a club rather than a shady business owner who hides behind really big guys and never appears. But that's a different image. And then if fans of the club like you, then you also have a fan club, which you wouldn't have if you're just in an oil tycoon. So that is an actual term coined for a particular reason. It's been used quite often, not just with sport, but with any form of entertainment. So anything that can get people passionate can result in money laundering.
And have you got any examples of the evidence that you've collated in this report? Have you got any specific examples around match fixing?
None that I would like to share, because a lot of them are documented, but we tried indeed not to analyse this based on particular examples. I've done research on match fixing quite a lot. And in the individual studies, we looked at particular cases and how they're structured. And what we tend to argue through the research and what we tend to argue through the report is that we should maybe avoid focusing on organized crime-related match fixing, which has been the main focus of traditional and new media, rather than what is actually the case of corporate crime, corruption in match fixing, and sometimes even serendipity or profit or opportunity-driven match fixing. So we've looked at a number of cases in order to actually compile this. So just, again, naming a few won't really...
Well, I'm going to name one anyway, Sid, just because I'm sat over here and I can do what I like over here.
Right.
Have a guess which team it's going to be about.
Nottingham Forest?
Yep, it is definitely about Nottingham Forest. And did you know that in 1984, Forest played Anderlecht in the UEFA Cup semi-final? They were 2-0 up from the home leg, then playing away in Anderlecht. Guess what the score was and finished?
No idea.
3-0 to Anderlecht. Forest were quite good back then. Despite what you might think now, they were quite good back then.
They used to,
and
yes.
We lost 3-0. And if you ever see the footage, which as a Forest fan, you know, my dad's made me watch this numerous times, there's a penalty. There isn't a player within 2 yards. And the guy throws himself on the floor, penalty. We then actually, so that made it 3-0. There was another goal given that was very dubious. And then in the last minute, we got a corner, scored. Paul Hart scored an absolute bullet header. No one near him. Got disallowed. No apparent reason. And everybody kicked off about it. 30 years later, it actually came out, and it's been through court and all the rest of it, that actually the referee had been bribed by £18,000 he was paid to basically throw this game. So it was the referee who was deemed to be corrupt. Anderlecht got banned from Europe for 1 year. Forest got nothing. Maybe that's why we are where we are now.
Well, you are quite biased, though. I mean, if you start
describing the story by
saying... No, if you start describing the story by saying that we... You've already lost the argument there.
I'm not arguing that we're biased, but, I mean, it has been proven that they did cheat and he was bribed. So Forest should probably be the best team in the world now.
But are situations like this happening even today? referees being involved in corruption to such a large extent?
Yes, to a very big extent. We've seen cases, even in the Olympics, where referees in basketball kept the timer on, so the match should have ended and a few seconds were kept on. We've seen cases in NASCAR, so race driving, a driver coming forward and saying that I was paid to crash my car so that somebody else wins. Fun fact, again, the driver was still allowed to participate. So we've seen match fixing, and we do still see match fixing in a number of leagues, in a number of sport. And unfortunately, again, we're paying attention to very few of them. So there's a lot of match fixing in amateur leagues, in younger players, so the under-18s, the under-17s, under-15s. We see a lot of match fixing there because there's less interest to regulate it. There's less people involved anyway, so it could be easier to fix something. All you need is the agreement of a few players, and that's it. And it's easier to find a random, well, legal or illegal bet provider situated on the other side of the globe who's willing to offer you a rate that is favorable for a match like this, whilst the rates that are offered for bigger matches, for more popular events, they tend to be regulated, and there's a number of systems available that track what is being offered. So if illegal activity or if abnormal activity is detected in terms of betting, UEFA, for example, have a system that can allow them to basically stop all legal betting for a match if during the actual progression of the match they realise that there is a problem, again, any irregular activity. You can't really implement such a system for an amateur league in a sport that you don't really pay that much attention to, where the governing bodies don't have the proficiency or the protocols to stop it. So we talk about the popular cases, but there are so many cases of match fixing.
With what you were saying, sorry, with the analysing it, yeah. Do you know where that specific lies? Is it just like, is it a calculation that brings up anomalies in terms of money that goes on?
In terms of the UEFA, the system they have?
Yeah.
It's an algorithm they have, a system that tracks how the betting should be going. So based on historical data and on how the match is actually developing, they can track and see. It's basically a line. I've seen how it's represented, how it should be going and how it is in reality going. So if they see a spike in reactions, that's when they know that there's something really off about it.
And would the people who are potentially betting on this and involved know what that spike is and be able to kind of work around it or just move to other markets? Is that what we may think may happen? I know this is speculative.
You mean the people that are betting?
Yeah, and or the match fixers. So if someone's involved with the corruption and they're looking to profit from it, would they know what that algorithm is now and go, you know what, let's avoid that game and let's go, like you said, to this one that's not being analysed and let's go and bet on this level of football instead?
Well, they know that there is a lot of attention on popular leagues and they know that governing bodies like UEFA are on it. They don't seem to be less interested in this league because there's still a lot of money involved. However, they just perfect their techniques from what we've seen and replicate them in other leagues. Yeah. So if they've already succeeded in manipulating a particular league, why not just implement the exact same system in another league?
Yeah.
And again, this can only trace legal betting. An estimation of what we have is that 70 to 90% of betting worldwide is illegal betting, which is not regulated, is not controlled, taxed in any way. So no one can actually trace what is happening there. No one can trace if a manipulator is involved 10% in legal betting, and then it's easier to pay 90% in illegal betting.
And do you think the punishment for such a crime justifies it? Is the punishment hard enough?
If somebody is caught, well, it depends, because what we see around the EU, and this is a problem not only for this study, but for a number of efforts. Laws depend on the country. So we don't see the same level of persecution in every country.
Right.
And quite often what we have seen is that a case against any form of corruption might begin, but actually getting all the evidence collected and getting everybody to reach the final state and seeing the final prosecution, we often get more disappointed than we care to admit. And when I was discussing this study, because this study was done whilst I was a member of the expert group of the European Commission on Sport Integrity, and Interpol and Europol are also sitting around the same table. And I remember the officers there saying that quite often they're involved in the initial stages of a big match-fixing case, and they get disappointed every time because it comes to the actual prosecution, and now it depends on the country. They cannot do anything else. And their hands are tied because some European countries don't have strict laws against corruption or against manipulation. That has been a problem, for example, with any form of conviction that goes under the wider umbrella of organized crime. Because of the terminology used, there are so many cases where people could just walk away because organized crime per se is a very particular thing. So something could be corporate crime or it could be any form of criminal activity. But if you try and charge somebody for a particular offense, then you need to justify that particular offense. And they could have done something else that is illegal, but they will still walk away from that particular offense, which is, to be honest, what Interpol has been pushing for.
But not very successful.
It hasn't been in a number of cases around Europe. Right. It hasn't been successful. We do see that new laws are being introduced, and there's a number of countries that are actually making steps towards that direction. But a lot of the laws were only introduced in the last 5-10 years. And again, corruption has been around for many years.
I think we're going to touch upon some of those laws and some of those things a bit later on. So we'll go into some detail of that. So we've talked about match fixing, and I'm sure we can talk about that for a long time. Let's just touch upon some of the other things involving money. So you mentioned earlier the tricks and kind of tax evasion and things like that. Can you explain some of those things to us and how people are money laundering and trying to do those kind of levels of corruption?
Yeah. So in a way, money laundering is the exact opposite from tax evasion. Money laundering is the legalization of income generated through any other form of activity, quite often illegal activities. And again, this can extend to selling drugs or guns or any form of illegal activity. But since the money is not declared in any other way, shape or form, it's then been legalized through sport.
So how would they do that?
By commercial agreements or by signing of players, by payments to players, through a very simple trick in the books, so the way that income is declared. So that's a case in which a sport club has been used as a front, basically, to declare that you're producing income that justifies the income that you've generated from somewhere else.
The famous old trick used to be paying at the turnstiles or attendance figures and claiming certain attendance figures that are just not true.
Attendance figures are a bit more difficult in some sporting organisations nowadays because they are controlled more.
Yeah.
So when we see electronic tickets being issued or a particular form of control on the turnstiles, it is more difficult to check indeed, but it's still, it creates more challenges to just inflate the numbers by the extreme that we heard of before. Maybe in smaller leagues we still see an inflation of numbers, but not to that extent. Quite often that happens through commercial agreements or through player transfers because it's the waters are muddier.
So in terms of a commercial agreement, can you give us an example, hypothetical example of how somebody would do that?
A sponsorship deal that appears out of nowhere through a company that is one that either is owned by friends or relatives of the owner of a club, where something is announced and the money of the deal are announced, even though they don't actually correspond to the real figures. The same with the signing of a player. Quite often, the actual figure is not given to the news, but then a figure appears out of nowhere, and it's very easy for a number to appear and then disappear again in the next financial year.
So quite easy to do, to kind of have any of these things going on.
Yes. And again, there's a number of cases currently that the Financial Task Force is looking after. They're chasing a number of cases of prophet that appears out of nowhere. But again, it is easy to hide profit, and it's easy to make profit appear out of nowhere. I know it shouldn't, but we have a lot of creative accounting around.
Right, so we've touched upon different types of corruption.
Yes.
My question is the subjectivity of the definition of corruption the reason why it's so prevalent?
I don't think so. I think it's because we as humans are faulty.
Okay.
Corruption has been around for as long as we have had a structured, organized society. So regardless of how we define it, if we choose to act in a way that, again, uses or misuses or abuses our power for any form of gain, then we choose to be corrupt. But by we, I mean anyone involved in humankind. So it's part of our nature. I don't think it's part of our definition. The problem with defining it comes from precisely how broad the scope of things that we can do illegally is. Illegally, morally, unethically, whatever adjective you want to use. But no, I think we are to blame. Not the definition, not anything else. We are in charge of our actions, and we choose to do it.
Right.
So we've talked about money a lot,
mm-hmm.
and match fixing. What about doping? What's the definition broadly? I know it's huge in terms of different sports. So a broad definition of what doping is, and then again, where is this kind of thing happening?
Well, where it's happening. It's happening everywhere, to start from there. Definition, any form of use of substances that are part of a list of prohibited substances could be, again, understood as doping. There's a long definition that WADA has, which is the one we tend to adopt, but this is it in simple terms.
And it's different for different sports at different levels, and different drugs are on different lists. So it's,
yes.
It was an unfair question.
No, and it gets updated very often. WADA is really on it, and they're trying to make sure that new substances are included, or that substances that are related to particular pharmaceutical drugs are excluded. So this is an ongoing scientific debate as to where does doping start and where does it stop. Unlike match fixing, going back to where we can find it, we find doping more in the commercial sports because it costs a lot. So all these very nice fancy substances cost a lot to be produced. So it makes sense that professional athletes, the ones competing in big leagues, big sporting events, are the ones consuming it.
And how prevalent is it?
A lot. From what we've seen, we haven't had Olympic Games lately. As far as I can remember in my life, there hasn't been a single Olympiad where we didn't have a scandal of a very big name athlete being caught doping.
But one of the pieces in your study, I'll just kind of read it from here. So according to a recent study by the World Anti-Doping Agency, up to 45% of athletes competing at two 2011 international championships claim to have taken performance-enhancing drugs in the previous 12 months. I mean, that's quite a number.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little bit further down, which again is astonishing, stark contrast with the prevalence detected by blood and urine tests taken by WADA during those two championships, which was 0.5 to 3.6%. So there's a huge discrepancy in how much cheating's happening. And I know these aren't the only two studies. This is well known that we think there's lots of cheating going on, lots of doping going on, yet the amount they get caught is very limited. To me, is that at that high level, that potentially suggests that the risk is kind of almost worth taking.
Well, first of all, there's a number of studies, not only by WADA, but by academics as well, indicating that there's a very high number of athletes actually admitting to taking anabolics. And yet, there are that many mechanisms to avoid tests or to somehow clean your body so by the time you're being tested, none of it is detected, that, of course, they have the incentive to do it, and they also have the pressure to do it, because don't forget, quite often in doping, it is individual athletes, it's not team sports. So there's more pressure and there's less support from other teammates, from other individuals that can tell you that, you know what, you can still succeed even if you don't take whatever substances people are forcing on you. But, I mean, why not? We've seen people walk away with medals. We've seen people, even though there are open cases of people being accused, they're still succeeding. So I think there needs to be an incentive on why they shouldn't take them. And quite often that is informing them, that is making clear that they can have a career without it, making clear that the side effects are going to be detrimental for one's health. We've seen a number of cases of athletes dying really young. And I don't think they're actually informed of all these repercussions before they make the decision to start doping.
But yeah, but potentially. I remember undergraduate degree, year 2000. One of the first things I remember being taught is that it's not necessarily the best athletes that win. It's the ones with the best chemists, sports scientists, because they know and they're just a step ahead of the game to kind of flush it out of the system, you know, not get detected. So if you know that's the case and everybody else is doing it, then, you know, that could potentially be where this kind of leads to people doing it.
Yes, but then...
I'm not saying it's right.
Yes, but if those athletes are presented with all the information and they're told that, you know what, if you do that, the chances of a heart attack or the chances or of anything happening in your body rises to this, I think they might think about it for a second time or a third time. Is it worth actually doing it?
No, I totally agree. I totally agree with you. One of the things I think we need to do in the future, podcast-wise, is to get somebody in who can tell us all about that and the physiological side of it all.
Yes.
That would help.
Well, we've come to the end of today's podcast, and Martin, I can see from your facial expression you want to get out of that seat. For our listeners, though, this is just the first podcast in our series with Elizabeth on corruption in sport. Stay tuned in the meantime, and you can check out our podcast with other guests on a range of topics covering sport. Thank you so much for coming today, Elizabeth.
And thank you.
We'll see you back in our studio very soon. Goodbye.
Thanks, Elizabeth. We've heard Elizabeth explain some interesting cases of corruption, including both bribery and match fixing, with some great insights into why corruption happens. If you want to find out more about how governments and organisations are responding to corruption and the effect that this is having, then check out our podcast, How Can We Tackle Corruption in Sport?
If you want to get in touch and let us know any subject areas or experts that you'd be keen to listen to, then contact me, Martin Foster, on m.foster@alborough.ac.uk or tweet me at martinfoster82. Bye for now. We'll see you next time.